Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for our edition today. And we're pleased to have J.B. John Bird with us today. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Kurt. Thank you for having me.
Glad you're able to take time out. I know your schedule these days is really busy, so I'm glad you're able to take time out to talk with me today about a number of things, primarily about the Digital Coast Act. And speaking of the Digital Coast Act, our newsletter listeners at least will know about it because we've been focusing on it for a while
exactly
now
the
in the newsletter
one.
And in other communications. And so as I was thinking about the fact that we're going to talk about Digital Coast, and some of our people have already heard about it, we've actually got a few comments from readers of the newsletter, I thought it might be a good idea to start out and talk a little bit about process, because not being in the fray, so to speak, most of us don't grasp how that process works. I don't think it's not somebody dreams up something one night and the next day it goes in as a bill. I guess maybe that might happen sometimes, but it's not the norm. So as we're proceeding, talk to us all about how that process works.
Green and computer.
Sure, Kurt. Yes, it's an interesting process. It's definitely not a one-time situation, and quite frankly, what the how Congress works is very interesting. Number one, if there's a great idea or a good idea or just an idea about a bill, it has to be vetted, and there's a process that Congress typically will conduct. And the first step is really to identify an issue. Who does that? Where does the idea come from? And so forth. Well, there are a variety of scenarios. If you're a lawmaker, sometimes just on a policy stance, your point of view, you take in an issue under your wings. You might have actually run on that issue as a candidate, and part of your campaign promise might be to then follow through and introduce a bill to impact that issue. Another way that an idea starts to at least be developed into a draft proposal or bill would be if there's something that's current event related, and by reaction, more than anything else, a lawmaker will decide that that is an issue they want to tackle, and one of the best ways to do so is to introduce a bill to identify the current event and how maybe Congress can impact that specific policy. So you have both a kind of a proactive approach as well as a reactive approach. And typically what will happen in either case is the lawmaker will entrust drafting the bill to a staff member.
Wow.
And these staffers tend to be on the younger side and also have exposure to different constituencies. So if you're a House member, you have your district within a certain state or commonwealth. If you're a senator, you represent the entire state or commonwealth. And that staffer will have great exposure to a lot of different constituencies. It could be just a constituent, like an NSPS member. Or it could be a trade association or professional society such as NSPS that can be called upon to provide advice. And through that vetting process of drafting a bill, the staffer and the member of Congress, whether it's a House member or a senator, will then get to the point where they actually want to introduce the bill and feel comfortable in doing so. And they've done the necessary due diligence for and against the bill, and hopefully the best way to actually draft it. At that point, the bill gets introduced in Congress, and the bill is assigned a number. In the House, typically you'll have a HR in front of the number, and in the Senate, you'll have an S in front of the number. And upon introduction, the bill will also be connected to a committee of jurisdiction. We'll just kind of thread in the Digital Coast here. So the Digital Coast Act, H.R. 1382, was introduced in last year, in 2013, and the bill was directed, appointed to the House Natural Resources Committee. In the Senate, once the bill gets introduced, it'll be directed and assigned to the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. From there, the committee basically has a major connection to the bill and has oversight to conduct a couple of different kind of hearings on the issue or the bill. If it wants to do an oversight hearing, and Kurt, you'll be very familiar with an oversight hearing. Back in June of 2013, you were able to come in and testify before the House Committee on Education and the Workforce on the Davis-Bacon issue on behalf of NSPS, and that was definitely an oversight issue.
Okay, one in this is
as well as in December 5th of last year, you came in and testified on behalf of two different bills in the House Natural Resources Committee. One is the FLARE Act, as well as the Map It Once, Use It Many Times Act. And so you've had two opportunities to actually, again, continue the NSPS role and not only providing oversight of an issue, but also helping in the actual legislative process through committee hearings. Another action the committees can take is literally to mark up the bill, which is to take a look at the introduced bill and then make any kind of amendments as necessary through another portion of the vetting process.
What was in there?
So what will happen is that a committee will then can either choose to pass the bill, report it out of committee favorably, or can sit on it and in effect kill it. So our intent with any of the bills that the NSPS has been had a hand in drafting is to obviously get the bills reported out of committee. At that point, whether it's a House committee or a Senate committee, the bills need to be moved on parallel tracks. And the House floor opportunity is then to vote on the bill, where the entire House will take a vote and go on record. Or it can be done by unanimous consent, with not needing a recorded vote. Same thing with the Senate. So what will happen is eventually you'll have a House bill and a Senate bill. And if there are any differences upon having been approved and voted and passed by both the House and Senate, any differences between the two bills will then need to go to what we call a conference committee. And the conference committee is to literally reconcile any differences found within the House bill and the Senate bill. And then once the conference committee... go ahead, Kurt.
I heard a blip. I thought we lost each other. What I was going to ask is, in terms of submitting the bill, are there advantages? I mean, for example, some people are on certain committees and others are on others, and so if my legislator doesn't have to be on the committee that's going to review the bill that I have, does that person still introduce it, or do they go to a committee member, or how does that work?
It could be very strategic. And, yes, ideally you would like to have a member of a committee take the lead on a bill and introduce it and then do some education with the other members of the committee, ask them to co-sponsor the bill and or be supportive when it comes time to actually vote on it and take a public policy position on the bill. Now, strategically, though, sometimes in a bipartisan opportunity, you can kind of connect the two sides of the aisle, and a lot of what NSPS advocates for is bipartisan, and so it can be very strategic to have not only a member of the committee, but maybe a member of the other party team up and co-sponsor the bill. In other situations, if there's not a committee member who's willing to take the lead on the bill, perhaps you do find someone outside the committee to be your champion and introduce the bill, and then team up with someone inside the committee to co-sponsor the bill, and therefore you can have someone from an outside perspective of the committee take the lead, but have someone inside the committee really kind of roll up their sleeves and help out in the process to move the ball forward, if you will. And just to finish up on the final point of the process, typically what will happen after the conference committee does their work and comes to a reconciliated version of a bill, then the House and Senate have to vote again on the bill as an updated version. And then ultimately, the president would then need to sign the bill and enact it by signing it into law and make it a public law. And that's officially, then the bill gets turned over to the federal agencies to implement that law. But yes, it can be very strategic. It's very helpful to have someone on committee, but it's not mandatory.
And obviously this can be a time-consuming process. We have a couple of minutes before the break, but I was just curious, bill numbers, if you don't get through in a session, do the numbers carry over? The number of the bill?
So, so each Congress, there's a two-year rotation each Congress. So this current Congress began in 2013, and it will end at the conclusion of this year, 2014. So because the House bill, H.R. 1382, was introduced last year, it does carry over into this year. Therefore, we did not need to reintroduce it. However, we are in the process of having a Senate bill introduced, and when the Senate bill gets introduced this year, it's okay. We're still okay for this Congress. Now, should there be a situation where, for whatever reason, Congress does not pass either bill or both bills this year, the bills will then fall into next Congress, which starts in 2015 and will end in 2016. So yes, at that point, should that scenario come into play, then yes, we will need to have the bills reintroduced.
So I think that's good information to people to know, because one would tend to think it's already in process and it wouldn't matter, but you're saying that isn't the case. That so if you see a different bill number over some period of time on the same issue, it's not because it's a brand new bill necessarily. It's a reintroduction of a bill that didn't get through its first cycle, so to speak.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And just to put this in context, thousands of bills, literally thousands of bills, get introduced in both the House and the Senate each Congress. So a two-year cycle.
We need to take our first break.
And in that two-year cycle,
let's go ahead and take our first break, and we'll pick up with this and then get into the Digital Coast when we come back.
Thank you.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to our second segment today with J.B. John Byrd, talking about, first of all, we've been talking about the process in Congress, primarily because I thought our audience would be interested in hearing how that process works and sometimes why things seem to take so long. But we do want to talk about the bill, and I guess as we were closing out, J.B., you were just talking about this two-year rotation, and maybe you want to finish up on that a little bit before you get into the bill.
So just quick two final points. As I was mentioning, there are literally thousands of bills in the House and the Senate for a two-year cycle in Congress that are introduced, and very, very few of them actually get enacted into law and receive the president's signature. So you end up having to be somewhat creative with the opportunities, and sometimes it just is, it's all about timing. So there has been testimony before about maybe taking the Digital Coast Act, whether it is its own bill or perhaps gets attached to a bill that perhaps might be a little bit more likelier to move and be processed through Congress. So we, at the NSPS level, we are looking at, number one, moving a standalone bill like the Digital Coast Act, H.R. 1382, and or take a look at attaching H.R. 1382 to another bill that could go through the Natural Resources Committee in the House or the Senate Commerce Committee. And so, therefore, again, you want to have as many options and hopefully diversify so that once the timing is right, you know, NSPS can be very involved in trying to enact this bill.
So if an agency, for example, let's say it's NOAA or whomever, has something they want to accomplish, and would they then go through this same process for introducing bills since they're an agency?
So what NOAA or other federal agencies are allowed or not allowed to do, lobbying-wise, that's really not their role, and it's not something that I think they can, you know, basically be in an advisory certainly role. If there's an idea, I think we try to vet things out with them from time to time and get their perspective and point of view and what would be both helpful to the agency as well as to the NSPS members. But as far as the actual constituencies out there that work hand-in-hand with a member of Congress to get a bill introduced and to move the bill, that tends to be on authorization bills like a Digital Coast bill. That tends to be more of an NSPS role than perhaps an agency role. Now, in the appropriation cycle, the federal agencies are brought in and to testify before Congress. And so that's a part of that portion of the legislative process, but more so the appropriation side of things. And so that's, again, where Congress can have oversight over an agency and kind of do a lessons learned, you know, best practices opportunity heading into a budget cycle or an appropriation cycle.
I see. Okay. So as far as Digital Coast is concerned, maybe could spend some time talking about what it is, I guess, before we talk about the process of how it's going.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, NOAA has, among other offices, an office that is somewhat in transition right now, but it's the Coastal Services Center in Charleston, South Carolina. And it is, there is a project that the CSC in Charleston operates and organizes and manages called the Digital Coast. It's a project. And the goal of this legislation, H.R. 1382, and the soon-to-be-introduced Senate bill, is to take that project, a very successful public-private partnership, best practices, great data collection, great data management, great data dissemination, really a model for how we believe federal agencies should operate. This bill takes that project and authorizes it into a codified program. So that's basically the goal of the bill outright. Now, what kind of background, what kind of other statistics might there that we can make a case for this? Well, just some brief talking points, but coastal watershed counties were home to 164 million Americans in 2010, approximately 52% of the United States population, expected to increase by 2020 by 15 million. So basically what the Digital Coast Project, and hopefully down the road as a program, will help to do is to balance economic development with ecological management. And one of the best ways to help this project is, again, to require a lot of accurate surveying, mapping, and geospatial data, and then help with integration of that information. So it really is needed to enable coastal communities to address coastal and emergency management issues. So that's really brief background to what the bill seeks to do, authorize the project into a program. The role for NSPS members, quite frankly, in this public-private partnership is to work with NOAA and NOAA Coastal Services Center to really work with the data collection opportunities. So the elevation data, the topo data, and how well that kind of correlates with other agencies' programs, whether it's the FEMA flood map modernization program, whether it's the Corps of Engineers, whether it's USGS and the 3DEP program, so whether it's LIDAR data collection opportunities or old-school kind of surveying, mapping, and geospatial collection opportunities, it really is a bill that will take a project and make it much more robust. And so it is a project that survives and operates on a somewhat, when you take a look at federal standards, a very meager budget, and it's a lot of the state and local partners that really help cobble together funds, but exists on a $4 to $5 million a year budget. So one of the ideas behind the bill is to authorize it into a program and then work with appropriators on the Senate and the House Appropriations Committee to make the funding more robust, and therefore more federal dollars theoretically would then go to surveyors to help actually do the data collection. So that's the most probably direct benefit.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking, too,
Kurt?
Though, that you still with me? Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Kurt, I'm still here.
Okay. Last week I had some problems, issues, so I thought maybe I got cut off, but you're hearing me okay.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. In addition to collecting opportunities, the data that gets created actually helps surveyors on down the road as well as they work with landowners, right?
Exactly right. So whether it's at the federal level, state or local, or business-to-business opportunities, yes, that data, because it's so well managed, and then it's again, the Coastal Service Center is really a model for how we believe other federal agencies should work. And you're right, this data that is collected by the surveying community and by the professionals and SPS members, that data then is captured and stored within NOAA. And NOAA does a lot of great work in working with other federal agencies to make that available to state and local government and other stakeholders. And so, yes, that is data that it's in one shape or another, it's to get that keeps on giving. And this great accurate surveying data can really help primarily for the program or the project into a program, but then the downstream benefits to all surveyors who can have access to that data and work with clients for a lot of different projects out there.
Yeah, if I'm thinking about it correctly, this information that's being collected through Digital Coast Act would also provide better data for things like flood mapping opportunities, which in turn then has an impact on surveyors who are dealing with landowners who need to know if they're in a flood zone or not and to what degree if they are. So I know all surveyors are unhappy with the current level of mapping that we have in most places in the country in terms of determining where flood zones are. And my interpretation of what this act would do would be able to, not in every part of the country, certainly, but certainly affect the areas affected by the act, would hopefully provide better information so that the flood data information is better for surveyors to use when dealing with their clients. Am I correct about that?
You are. And, yes, so there are a variety of applications. The FEMA MapMod program, yes, that is a huge connection to this entire bill and issue. And I think a lot of members of Congress have taken the time to hear the NSPS members and have been educated on this specific connection to the FEMA program. There are other federal programs out there as well, and that's part of the education process. But quite frankly, now that we're fully engaged in the hurricane season, quite frankly, a lot of these specific issues are going to have even another kind of, as we get deeper into the hurricane season, a more of a creeping connection, and I think you're going to hear more and more about this. So the timing of the bill's introduction, where we are on the schedule, and natural, items on the calendar that we can all kind of expect this time of year and later in the year, a lot of things point to taking timely action to get this bill introduced in the Senate as well as enacted, hopefully, in the public law as soon as possible.
The reason I brought up the FEMA thing is one of the reactions I got from somebody when we put this in the news and views was, well, that might help a couple of people who do mapping or LIDAR or whatever, but it's not going to help me as a surveyor. And I just wanted to make sure people understood that it will provide better data for any of us who are going to help people in these areas, regardless of whether it's for flood or whatever the case may be. But it's a benefit to the surveying community to have this better data, which was the point I was trying to make.
And it's also a benefit to members of Congress. They are getting hammered by their constituents on FEMA flood map changes. So, quite frankly, they are actually asking for better and more accurate survey data. And, yes, this really does kind of help kind of check off that box that members of Congress have to now address as more and more of their constituents, quite frankly, reach out to them. And it's really not complimenting them. It's complaining. So this survey data is very helpful to the members of Congress then to work with FEMA to help address their constituents. And that's another role for NSPS members. So definitely encourage NSPS members to definitely, especially the state societies, to reach out to their senators, to reach out to their individual members of Congress in the House districts, and really offer to be a go-to person on this issue. And there's a lot of expertise that members of Congress could rely on professional surveyors, and this is right up there. So timeliness, yes, on the FEMA issue, and number two, this bill does address both and can be very helpful to a lot of these different public policy issues. One other item is that the...
Before we do that, John, let's take our second break. We're to the part of our second break already. Sorry. So let's go do that.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to our third segment today with John Byrd. We're talking about Digital Coast Act, and we were discussing some of the aspects of that. But before we move forward, it's the time of the show when we hold a little contest for our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, and I ask a question of our guest, and whatever the answer is, the first person to email back to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com wins for the day. So as we're talking about how legislation works, JB, the simple question is, how long is the legislative cycle?
2 years.
2 years.
Congress, this current Congress started 2013 to 2014. Yes, 2 year period.
2 year cycle is the answer we're looking for today. Before we went to break, you were talking about a number of things, talking about working with the agencies and how surveyors could get involved. And for those who are interested in the contracting side of that, would they contract with NOAA for this, or how would that work?
Right. So through the Coastal Services Center, the current program,
okay,
project does have that opportunity to contract with NSPS members for the data collection opportunities, yes.
In this particular instance, it might be worthwhile to spend a little time talking about what coastal actually means here. It doesn't necessarily mean you live right on the ocean, right?
Correct. And right before the break, I was just about to address that, so you read my mind perfectly. So what you can do, if anyone wanted to actually go to the Coastal Services Center website and click on the Digital Coast opportunity, you can actually get county-by-county snapshots and profiles. And so what you'll find is that some of the counties are literally on the coast, but then there are other counties that are actually do not have a coast, but because they fall within a floodplain, extended inland, or for some other natural connection to the coastline, outside of sharing the coastline, they are also included. So it's one of these situations where in some states, almost the entire state might be included in the digital coast. On other hands, maybe just the coastal counties might be, and there might be some areas up to a Piedmont portion of some states where inland counties are also covered. So, yes, don't judge the bill by its title. It can definitely extend into other counties beyond the shoreline.
And when we're talking about coastline, we're not necessarily talking about ocean coastline. We're talking about lakes too, right, the Great Lakes?
Great Lakes, and that's a perfect segue into the Senate bill and what we're trying to do. Freshman Senator Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat from Wisconsin, hails from one of the Great Lakes states and took an interest in the bill. And it's very interesting. In the House, you have a bipartisan introduction of the bill, H.R. 1382, by Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger of suburban Baltimore, Maryland, taking lead on the bill, who is not a member of the House Natural Resources Committee, but he decided to work in a bipartisan manner with a member of the House Natural Resources Committee, Don Young of Alaska. And Congressman Young of Alaska represents the entire state, so by default, he's basically the third senator of Alaska. So last time I checked, Kurt, and please verify if I'm wrong, but Alaska has a little coastline.
It does have a little bit.
So it's very interesting. We have a Democrat from Maryland, from, say, the Baltimore Harbor area, to the great state of Alaska with a little shoreline. And then in the Senate, we have commitment from Senator Baldwin to soon introduce the bill. So you have the Wisconsin and Great Lakes area covered there. Now, who has NSPS members reached out to convince to help co-sponsor the Senate bill? Well, we're really proud to report that thanks to a lot of the activities, including the NSPS members, there are six current co-sponsors. And I'll just briefly run down the list, Kurt, if that's all right, in alphabetical order by state. So we mentioned the Alaska connection. Well, Senator Begich, a freshman senator from Alaska, who also is the chair of the relevant subcommittee on the Senate Commerce Committee, decided to co-sponsor the bill. And that is a huge development, because when we earlier discussed the the opportunity to have a bill, once introduced, be assigned to a committee, and then the committee takes action on the legislative idea or bill, Senator Begich is going to have a major, major role. So to have the actual Senate subcommittee chairman on record as supporting the bill, that's a great development to report. So well done to Alaska. Next up is Senator Mikulski of Maryland, who is the chairwoman of the Senate Appropriations Committee. That is a huge, huge commitment for that NSBS members should be really happy to see. And when we discussed earlier about a strategy to, number one, have this bill, the Digital Coast Act, authorize a project into a program, Senator Mikulski and her committee are going to be very influential once the bill is enacted into law to actually fund what has been authorized. And so that's a major, major development. And the next several senators are just as key. Senator Angus King, an independent from Maine, a former governor of Maine, someone who gets high technology issues, is very helpful because of the Maine shoreline issues. Senator Shaheen of New Hampshire is also a freshman senator, and representing a state with just a smaller amount of coastline than Alaska, but she represents New Hampshire. Senator Whitehouse of Rhode Island, who also is very influential on coastal issues, he is the chair of the Senate Oceans Caucus. And we are trying to work with their staff to get the Oceans Caucus in the Senate to do a briefing on the bill and on the project and how we're trying to, through the bill, take the project into a program. And Senator Cantwell of Washington, she is the Senate Small Business and Entrepreneurship Committee chairwoman. So it's a very interesting mix of senators, some that are chairing other committees, some that are chairing a subcommittee that will have direct jurisdiction on the bill. So that's a great start for Senate support and Senate commitment. What the NSPS members can really try to reach out to is to go down your list, state society by state society, and number one, we need to work with and identify a Republican from a coastal state or representing a Great Lakes state, and see if we can get a commitment to have a Republican senator from one of those states to work with Senator Baldwin and the other senators to introduce the bill in a bipartisan manner, just like the House bill, H.R. 1382, was introduced in a bipartisan manner. So I think that is what is the quickest role and the most relevant role and action that NSPS members can take today? It simply is to call your senator, email your senator. If you know a staff member on the senator's staff, email that staffer and follow up with a phone call. Let them know that Senator Baldwin will soon introduce the Senate bill and very much are still trying to identify a senator on the Republican side to also introduce the bill in a bipartisan manner. So definitely just check your state-by-state listings if you're hearing us right now and see if you can and voice in and call in and email those respective Senate offices. That's a number one takeaway from today, in my view.
When listeners are interested in doing that, would they be able to contact you to get some background information? Or I mean, I assume if they call in, they need to know a little bit more about what they're talking about. Is there something we can provide to them?
Yes, that's a great point, Kurt. Number one, please call me anytime today, rest of the week, before the 4th of July, of course. Number one, the best way to reach me here in the office is 703-787-6665, and we can trade email as well, jbyrdjaybird at jmp jmpa.us, jbird@jmpa.us. We have a couple things that we can provide to you. We have talking points on the bill. We have what Senator Baldwin's staff has created, a one-page issue paper about the bill. We actually have the bill itself, the draft bill. We will share that with you. And then we can direct you to the Senate website to locate the call-in number for your respective senator. And then I can also help you micro-target if you do not know a staff member in the respective Senate office. I will be able to assign one to you, and that way you can, whether you already know the staff member or want to, or I can help you get to know the staff member. There are a couple ways we can work with you to number one, reach out to your senator or senators, and then provide you the necessary information for you to do your own due diligence and then be prepped as best possible to reach out and then communicate that message of co-sponsoring the Digital Coast Act in the Senate.
We've got a little over a minute before our last break. I guess one of the things we ought to do, too, and you probably already thought about this, go ahead and put this contact information in News and Views again this week so people, if they are listening now and didn't write it down or to reach further beyond people on the radio, we can put something in News and Views. I assume you're planning to do that.
Yes, and real quick, because the Congress is going to be in recess for July 4th, if you have an opportunity to literally visit with your senator, talk and ask them to co-sponsor the Digital Coast Act in person. So it could be a parade, July 4th parade. A lot of them will be involved in those festivities. If there's a local civic club that you can take part in and you know that they're going to be speaking before, go and attend, and or if there's a town hall, if there's typically what will happen is that they do touring around their home state. So this is when they're in recess over July 4th break, see if you can see what their schedule is and literally just see them in person.
And they can learn where those are just by going to each senator's websites, right?
Typically, each senator will do some kind of press advisory and list it on as a news release and say, so-and-so senator will be traveling around, and this is the schedule for Saturday, Sunday, Monday, X, Y, and Z day. And hopefully you can compare and contrast your schedule with their schedule, and hopefully you can make it to hopefully one event.
That sounds
least.
Good. Let's go to our last break, and we'll come back and follow up with some final thoughts.
Attention surveyors. Are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we're back with our last segment today with John Bird. John, you were starting to ask me a question about something on our website. You can go ahead and finish that up for the listeners if you want.
Sure. Thank you, Kurt. If everyone simply goes to the NSPS homepage, you'll see some of the direct NSPS connection to NOAA funding. There are two links on the top of the webpage, homepage, for the funding letters supporting NOAA funding in both the House and the Senate committees. So that's another kind of connection, and this is where I think NSPS advocacy has really tried to trumpet the fact that when it comes to working with federal agencies, whether it's authorization bills or appropriation bills in the budget process, we've tried to engage the different federal agencies out there and kind of relay what we're hearing from the agencies by partnering with the agencies and relaying that information to Capitol Hill and the different members of Congress who champion these causes, the different committees that have jurisdiction over these agencies. And so it's one of these things where the Digital Coast Act is a kind of a natural progression from the good relationships we have with the federal agencies, including NOAA.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had written myself a note during the last segment to ask you a question about funding levels. And now, will the funding primarily or exclusively for Digital Coast come through NOAA?
Yes, primarily. The way that the current project operates, there's some outside funding, so non-federal.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's going to come from Congress, yes, that would go through NOAA funding primarily.
Would this be a kind of thing that because of states being impacted, that states would participate in any way in a funding level?
Yes, I mean, that's how the current project operates somewhat, so that it would help kind of continue the ideas behind the current project, but with more robust funding coming from the federal side of things, and there would be opportunities for state and local government to still play a role and to help, chip in from time to time. But really, the goal of this bill is to kind of shift the weight from the state and local partners to Congress and the federal funding for this program, for this project, to turn it into a program and have more robust funding come from Congress and from the federal side of the equation.
Right. Well, I know during the discussion, it's become apparent that working collectively with people is very important. You mentioned the senators who are all beginning to work together. You mentioned a variety of times there where people find reason to work together. And I thought it would be of interest to the audience if you talked a little bit in our last segment about coalitions and how when we're trying to do things as NSPS, there are coalitions that we get involved in with people who sometimes folks might not think there's any reason for us to have a connection to, but those coalitions turn out to have some interesting partners sometimes. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how that works.
Sure. Well, let's start off with the Digital Coast Coalition, if you will. There's a partnership that operates in close proximity with the Digital Coast Project through the Coastal Services Center. It's known as the Digital Coast Partnership. It's comprised of seven or eight, I believe, groups ranging in a variety of interests. And then there are two members of this advocacy coalition outside of the Digital Coast Partnership. NSPS is one, MAPS is the other. And when you put together that 10 to 11 group association or society coalition, and everyone is pitching the same message on Capitol Hill, that's where you basically take the expertise of NSPS members and then leverage a lot of other groups' vocal support as well and knowledge base on the actual project. And it really does kind of connect better on the Hill when we have so many different voices singing the same tune. And so NSPS has been one of the leaders in this advocacy coalition for Digital Coast. And one of the first kind of fruits of, or benefits from this is when, Kurt, you had the opportunity last July, I believe last July the 8th, 2013, to go before Congress and attend a congressional briefing on the Digital Coast Project and bill. And you were able to provide brief remarks in front of a packed room of congressional staffers to one who wanted more information about this project, the benefits to the different congressional districts and states out there. So, yes. And so NSPS has been working with the Digital Coast Partnership and Advocacy Coalition to promote the bill, promote the project, and to help educate members of Congress. There are other coalitions on different issues that NSPS takes part in and is very active in. Some that are kind of been around the block. Everyone will remember Light Squared, where that issue, while it might be have dimmed a little bit, it's still out there, and there's a GPS coalition that NSPS joined, was one of the original founders of and supporters of, and so NSPS continues to take part in that and to be vigilant about that issue. One of the more recent coalitions that NSPS has joined is the Business Coalition for Fair Competition, BCFC. And I know that Kurt's already taken an active participation in this coalition, but the goal of that coalition is to take a look at public-private partnerships, what's the proper roles and responsibilities between the public sector and the private sector, and see if there's a way to open up more business opportunities for a lot of the NSPS members, especially in the small business sector. But really, we took a look at an issue like federal prison industry reform, FPI reform, and that was impacting negatively the surveying, mapping, and geospatial community. And so that was kind of a proper home on this issue was for NSPS to join the coalition. But it really is an interesting coalition and one that, Kurt, do you want to briefly mention what you did last week on behalf of the coalition representing NSPS?
You mean the meeting we had just at the end of last week?
Yes, exactly, with David Rouser of North Carolina.
Right. We had an opportunity to meet with a I don't know if new candidate is the right word, but running for a spot from North Carolina. And we had a really good opportunity to meet with him, and I think there were, four or five of us from the coalition that were there to talk with him and explain to him what some of our issues were. I would say he was quite receptive. I was very pleased with the way the meeting went. And it does create an opportunity for us to not only express our views to candidates or people who are already elected, but it gives us an opportunity to strengthen those bonds with other people who are in the coalition. And I found that to be very helpful in trying to deal with the issues is actually just knowing who the people are and being able to communicate directly with them.
Right, and NSPS really gains from these kind of opportunities by leveraging its own expertise on these issues to also hearing lessons learned from other groups and other societies. So it's one of these things that we think is beneficial both in the short term and long term. And David Rouser, as Kurt alluded to, is a second-time candidate for a House District number 7 in North Carolina, and it's an open seat. And one of the goals behind these kind of meetings through BCFC is twofold. Number one, help educate these candidates running for Congress, and then so they can take some of these issues maybe back to the district and meet with professional surveyors in the 7th District or North Carolina at large, in the case of David Rouser. But number two is that once someone like a candidate like David Rouser takes the oath of office next Congress in 2015 and gets assigned a certain committee, and we've kind of heard that there's an opportunity on the perhaps on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee on the House side that he might be very interested in joining, as well as the House Agriculture Committee. So what we hope to do is that to continue the relationship, and just like the bill, Digital Coast is not a one-time event, it's a process. The same thing we are trying to identify are candidates that we can connect with early on, develop a relationship, and then continue the relationship into years to come so that the candidate gets to know NSPS, we get to know the candidate, and then once they take the oath of office, work with that member of Congress on the various committees of jurisdiction that they will be a member of or reside, and then work on bills, work on issues that directly influence professional surveyors. And, you know, just be in a position where down the road, again, because of the process of how Congress kind of goes through and vets issues, this is our way to vet a candidate and then hopefully work with the member of Congress in the future.
Yeah, we are pretty close to time here, JB. Before we go, I just wanted to thank you for being with me today and express my gratitude for your abilities and your knowledge to help us. We're very fortunate at NSPS to have you and JMPA representing us because you know the issues. You take the time to learn and you focus. You not only know the individuals, you've spent time building relationships and you know the right people to talk to, but you also know the issues, and that's really important for us as professional surveyors to have representatives who are assisting us getting in the doors, but also really understand our issues. It's not just a matter of saying, okay, I set this meeting for you, you go talk about it. You guys actually engage and help us, and that's very beneficial to us.
Well, two final points, Kurt. Thank you very much. So, number one is a team effort. JMPA, as you know, is also comprised of John Pelletiello, Nick Pelletiello, Sally Pelletiello, and Margaret Bula. So it's a team effort here. But really, the team effort is NSPS. And so it is up to each NSPS member to engage their member of Congress, to reach out to federal agencies, to partner, and to connect. And please let us know at JMPA, we work for y'all. And please let us know if you have any questions. We can be an asset to you. And just connect with Kurt, connect with us. And we'll be happy to help you all on whether it's the Digital Coast Act or other initiatives here at the federal level. Thank you very much,
Kurt. John. And that's a good note to end on. So thank everybody for joining us today, and thank you, JB, for being with me.